getting in oxygen through their skin and surviving the winter, unlike a lot of the upland woodland frogs. The wood frog, the gray tree frog, spring peepers, and boreal chorus frogs all overwinter in the leaf litter up on high ground. But the leopard frogs, the green frogs, the mink frogs, the pickerel frogs, that crowd, they all winter in water. We will have more student phenology coming up in about 45 minutes. Right now, it's time to tell you that you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Weather around our region, we may see some rain today and into tonight. May just be some sprinkles out there. Temperatures in the low to mid 50s. Up next, we've got the Up North Report that includes some updates from high school sports and sport tournaments that are coming up. Stay tuned.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Hibbing police arrested a man Sunday on suspicion of intentional second-degree murder. Officers responded early Sunday to reports of gunfire in the Meadowview Apartments parking lot. They found a man with gunshot wounds to his chest, later identified as 24-year-old Parker Charles Johnson of Hibbing. Responders rendered aid, but Johnson was pronounced dead at the scene. Midday Sunday, Hibbing PD arrested a man without incident and say he is cooperating with the investigation. 30-year-old Daniel James Dale was in custody at the St. Louis County Jail and has not yet been formally charged as of Monday afternoon. State House Speaker Lisa Demuth will run for governor. The 58-year-old joins a growing field of Republicans vying to take on Governor Tim Walz next year. Demuth was first elected to the House in 2018 after serving on her local school board in Cold Spring for over a decade. The Minnesota Reformer reports that Demuth says her solid conservative values cross party lines, and as the highest-ranking Republican in the state, her record as a leader makes her the best candidate for governor. In her initial campaign message, Demuth says she has, quote, had enough of Tim Walz dividing Minnesotans to cover up his failures.
Let's be real. Tim Walz doesn't just disagree with us, he hates us. He's more focused on attacking President Trump than on fixing Minnesota.
Also vying for the Republican nomination are 2022 nominee Scott Jensen, State Representative Kristen Robbins, and Army veteran and healthcare executive Kendall Qualls. The Bureau of Criminal Apprehension says breathalyzer results previously called into question are accurate. The BCA temporarily ordered law enforcement to stop using DataMaster breathalyzer tests last month after the discovery of data entry errors related to the dry gas cylinders used in the machines. But the agency says its lab scientists mathematically verified that the data entry errors did not impact the accuracy of the tests. Hundreds of tests were compromised because of the error, potentially impacting drunk driving cases. At least one case was dismissed in Aiken County. Superintendent Drew Evans said at a Friday press conference that results will have to be examined on a case-by-case basis, but there shouldn't be any impact.
These amended results will be provided to law enforcement that will provide them to the prosecutors, and they'll make a determination what the next steps might be legally.
From now on, only BCA personnel will replace dry gas cylinders. Half of all DataMaster instruments were verified and secured as of Friday, with full completion expected in the next few weeks. Two Northland athletes took home hardware from the state cross-country meet Saturday. Staples Motley senior and defending champ Audrey Brownell shaved 2.6 seconds from last year's race time, but it wasn't enough to defend her title. Brownell finished second. Detroit Lakes sophomore Connor Maleka took seventh. 12 teams and 37 individual student athletes from northern Minnesota competed at the meet. Six more finished in the top 20, and the Greenway-Nashua-Keewatin boys had the best team placement at seventh. Two more state tournaments kick off this week. Five Northland teams will compete at the state volleyball tournament, which runs Wednesday through Saturday. Grand Rapids will play in Class 3A, Esko in 2A, and Nevis, Northwoods, and Ada Borup West in 1A. All five teams are seeded in the bottom three and face some of the top teams in the state in the quarterfinals. While the courts will be clear by Sunday, there will still be a lot of football to be played. At least two Northland teams will advance to the semifinals set for next week. That's because half of the nine-player bracket is made up of Northern Minnesota teams. Kitson County Central will play Cook County Thursday in Grand Rapids, and Cromwell Wright Area will play the defending champs Fertile Beltrami Thursday in Moorhead. Also Thursday in 2A, Moose Lake Willow River will play in its 18th state tourney since 2006, and in 3A, Grand Rapids will face Benilde St. Margaret's, the same school Thunderhawks Volleyball will play. Manoman-Waubun and Barnum represent the Northland Friday in single A. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Coming up, we've got more news from Morning Edition from National Public Radio, an update on Election Day and the four big races to be watching. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.
We receive support from Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the Gigazone, a broadband cooperative featuring all fiber optic Gigazone internet speeds up to 10 gigs and local customer service. Learn more at paulbunyan.net.
The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is looking for people to collect tree seeds and cones this fall and winter. Current high-demand species include jack pine, black spruce, and red pine. Visit mndnr.gov/seedcone for more information.
Oh, the jack pine and the red pine are pretty easy. Well, jack pine more than red pine, but both are easy compared to the black spruce. Climbing a black spruce is a real experience. If you haven't done so, you ought to try. It's sort of like climbing in the hair of a porcupine, I think. Support for KAXE comes from the Itasca County Habitat for Humanity, presenting their annual fundraiser, Building for Tomorrow, on Tuesday, November 18th from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Cohasset Community Center.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. Voting ends today in a handful of high-profile elections, including for mayor of New York City and for governor in New Jersey and Virginia.
It's a tradition to watch those three elections. They always come in the first year of a presidency, and people look for clues to what voters are thinking. This year, there's an extra big election to watch, a ballot measure in California that could influence who captures Congress next year.
Here to talk us through these races is NPR political correspondent Ashley Lopez. Ashley, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start in California. It's a one-issue election, kind of unusual.
Yeah, kind of. It's a one-ballot measure on the ballot asking voters to allow state lawmakers to redraw their congressional map ahead of the 2026 election. California has an independent redistricting commission, which is something voters approved about 15 years ago. If passed, this measure would allow Democrats in the state to bypass that commission so that they can do a partisan gerrymander. That means they would draw up to five more seats that their party is favored to win in the midterms.
But you can't think about California in isolation here because it's part of a national redistricting fight between Democrats and Republicans in a number of states. So in this case, this is Democrats in California responding to Republicans in Texas.
That's right. And Democrats went as far as saying that in the ballot language of this measure. Texas redrew its map at the request of President Trump and created five more favorable seats for Republicans in the state. And California basically wants to offset that edge that Trump wants. And this measure looks like it's likely to pass. I was actually in Southern California last week, and many Democratic voters told me they have like mixed feelings about bypassing the Independent Redistricting Commission and allowing gerrymandering, but they think it's more important to fight back against Trump and Republicans, and this is one way they can.
All right, let's move to the other coast, to New York City. What should we know about the mayoral race there?
Right. So the frontrunner for that race is Zohran Mamdani, who is 34 years old, and he's a member of the New York State Assembly. He won the Democratic primary this summer, which surprised a lot of folks because he was relatively unknown when he entered the race. And he beat a former governor in that primary contest, Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo decided to stay in the race by running as an independent. In the last days of the campaign, Cuomo has gotten some big endorsements, including the president's. But this hasn't been an easy fight for him. Mamdani has a very energetic grassroots campaign that has engaged a lot of young voters in the city, especially especially on affordability issues.
Also interesting that the president bypassed the Republican in the race to go to Cuomo as an independent. Okay, so what should we keep an eye on when it comes to the gubernatorial races in New Jersey and Virginia?
Yeah, so Democrats are out of power in Washington, obviously, but governorships have been this area of government where they've been able to somewhat push back against the Trump administration. So the stakes of these races are particularly high for Democrats. In Virginia, Democrats have a decent shot. Abigail Spanberger, a former member of Congress, is polling ahead in that race against Republican Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earl Sears. And there's a history of the party in power in the White House typically losing the race for governor in Virginia.
And what about New Jersey?
Yeah, I mean, that race might be a little tougher for the Democratic Party. Besides the polling being close, history is not on the party side like it is in Virginia. Voters have not elected the same party for governor for three terms in a row since the 60s. So Congresswoman Mikey Sherrill is seeking to defy that trend against Republican Jack Cittarelli.
So what if anything about tonight will you be looking for as a possible clue to the midterm elections next year?
Well, I'm going to be looking at how Democrats perform in these races. Yes, they're favored to win a lot of them, but there is a big difference among these candidates. Mamdani and Spanberger, for example, represent very different parts of the Democratic coalition. And results could tell us something about how voters are responding to different kinds of candidates and messaging as the party looks to next year.
That is NPR's Ashley Lopez. Ashley, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
The many voices we're hearing about this election include Faz Shakir. He is the chief political advisor of independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. He directs the media organization More Perfect Union. He's come by Studio 31 this morning. We've got him some coffee with a little cream. Is that right? Did we get you? Is
Thank
it good?
You, Steve. Okay. Good to see you.
It's the staff who brought it by. Glad it's according to your order. So how will you read first the New York results?
Well, already Zora Mamdani has engineered a massive turnout. If you go back to the 2024 election, Steve, and you say what were the challenges of the Democratic Party and the Harris campaign, it's that they didn't mobilize traditional constituencies and get new voters into the voting booths. And it was one of the reasons why she didn't win. Here you have Zora Mamdani almost answering for the problem. He's in the primary and now in the general. If you look at the early vote turnout in New York, already engineering massive turnout, particularly among constituencies, people of color, young people who were least likely to vote in the last election cycle, and that's good news.
There's a couple of different ways I could think about Mamdani's appeal, and one is he's a democratic socialist and he has a certain set of policies. But another way to think of him maybe is just that he's young and he's talented and different, and so he's interesting to younger people. Which do you think it is?
He's all of those, and he has an agenda that speaks affirmatively at a time when I think one of the struggles of the Democratic brand is, what are you going to do if I put you into power? What are the answers to the solutions that you want to bring? Here comes Zora Mamdani saying, hey, buses fast and free, childcare universal, new grocery stores to service underserved populations. Here comes taxes that we tax more on the rich. These are affirmative visions of a society that we want to have, and I think Mamdani has tried to hopefully urge a lot of other Democrats to say, campaign on the back of something, not just against Donald Trump.
Just to be clear, you're saying these are not symbolic promises. People will expect him to deliver those exact things.
Thankfully, Mamdani is impressive in this way that he understood the tools that the mayor actually has. When he says freeze the rent, he knows that that's a power that the mayor has. When he talks about expanding bus lanes, that's something he has already done. So I think he's been grounded in what are the actual authorities that the mayor has and how can I use them to do something for you.
Although I think I just want to pause on this for a moment. I mean, the mayor does have the authority to freeze the rent. The city government messes with rent all the time in New York and the rent is still too damn high. I mean, rent control doesn't seem to have worked in New York City. Is there a danger in making these promises that maybe you can't?
One of the challenges of a candidate at this moment, any candidate, is integrity. When you say you're going to fight for somebody, is it in your bones? Is it in your DNA? One of the reasons I think Mamdani is succeeding and so many people, Bernie Sanders is so popular right now, is that there's a sense that while corruption is all abound around us in politics, Trump is certainly leading the way in the most corrupt government we've seen in our modern lifetimes. Here comes people with integrity saying, we may disagree, but the North Star Solutions is improving your life. And know that when I'm in office, I won't forget about you. I am wholly focused on it. You can trust me.
I want to underline another aspect of this that I'm sure you're very familiar with. Mamdani has become a big star on Fox News, possibly the biggest star short of Sean Hannity. He's on all the time. people are warned about him continuously. He actually went on Fox News and took some questions, of course. But I'm curious if you think that kind of intense attention by Republicans helps him or hurts him.
Well, you know, nationally, it's a challenge because Joram Amirani is a New York City mayoral candidate, and he has done a fantastic job of making himself aware to the people of New York City. Now, if you live in Nebraska, if you live in California, if you live in Arizona, you know, why does Joram Amirani matter to you? Not much. But Fox News has decided, and the right has decided, well, I want to tell you that this is scary, a scary proposition. And I suspect that one of the lessons that comes out of the Mamdani campaign is that people in Arizona, Nebraska, California will have to figure out the way that they speak to their own constituencies, that learn some lessons about the successes that Mamdani has had, both in how he's communicated, but the fact that he's got a substantive agenda that people believe and trust in and want desperately, especially as Trump, you know, leading our economy. I think right now his polling suggests that he's the least popular he's ever been on the economy, 70% disapproval.
Let me ask about that, because Trump is unpopular right now, and Democrats seem to be even more unpopular, and it's a close race, at least in New Jersey. We don't know what's going to happen there. Does it bother you that Democrats have not been able to take so much advantage of Trump's unpopularity?
We'll see. I mean, you know, you'll find out what the results of this were. If you look at 2024 election, Kamala Harris wins both of those states by 6 points. Mm-hmm. So that's the baseline heading into this election cycle. If you go back to how we did in the first Trump term, you know, Virginia, I think the gubernatorial candidate there was a Democrat, Ralph Northam. He won by 9 points. In New Jersey, they won by double digits in Trump's first term. So I think you can overperform the baselines of plus six if that's the way you're looking at it.
I guess I'm just thinking Democrats don't seem to have a very coherent national message at this point.
Yes, you're right. And, you know, that's one of my pet challenges and problems and frustrations right now is that you should go into this election cycle saying here's 3, 4, 5 things that we as Democrats want to do. That said, there's an energy and enthusiasm out there among the public that is incredible. Already in the Trump's second term, you're seeing more activism and action and grassroots engagement than you did in Trump's first term.
Faz Shakir, Chief Political Advisor of Bernie Sanders, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Good to see you.
A federal court has restored some of those federal benefits for food known as SNAP that were cut during the government shutdown. It comes as top Trump officials have started claiming the entire program is corrupt. NPR's Jude Jaffe Block reports.
Over the past few days, Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins has started pushing the message that federal food aid is filled with fraud. Here she is on Fox News on Sunday.
We sent letters to every governor in America being very clear that no illegal aliens can use SNAP. Zero, zero, zero.
But people in the country illegally have never been eligible for SNAP. In that same interview, Rollins spoke about USDA's controversial demand that states turn over the personal data of all SNAP recipients. Multiple lawsuits have challenged that demand, but nearly 30 mostly Republican states did turn over data for millions of people.
We have found thousands and thousands of illegal use of the EBT card. We have been moving people off of SNAP. We've got almost 700,000 people, I think, we've moved off just since the president took office. We've arrested about 118 people.
Some in the pro-Trump media space quickly reported that the alleged fraud was committed by immigrants in the country illegally. Rollins didn't actually make that specific claim, though she alluded to it on X. Tracy Roof says this is part of a larger rhetorical strategy by the Trump administration.
I mean, the same thing is being done with Medicaid to say that Democrats are trying to provide coverage to all these illegal immigrants, which it's not.
Roof studies SNAP as a political scientist at the University of Richmond. While Rollins has suggested there's something suspicious about SNAP's expansion in recent years, Roof says it's actually because
the high prices for food and the fact that a lot of people just can't stretch their dollars from their incomes enough to be able to feed their families.
Roof also says the number Rollins gave need a lot more context. For example, the 700,000 people who were taken off the program may no longer be eligible due to Congress's recent cuts to SNAP. Jude Jaffe Block, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
Coming up, we've got John Latimer's Phenology Report. It is 7:19. Welcome to the KEXC People Powered Morning Show. We appreciate you being with us. We've got nature and then nature and some more nature coming up for you.
Right. And you'll just have to, you know, deal with it. Go outside if you can't stand it.
We heard from Barry Lyons. He said at 5:45 this morning, I could hear an eagle call evidently flying around my house. Seemed odd to have one active in the dark.
I've had them calling, you know, after dark and early in the morning. They could have gotten disturbed off the nest by something. I don't know if he has a nest near his house, but oftentimes they come to my house because I have a nest there. The pair that live there come in this time of year and do some improvements, do a little change the feng shui for the new year, I guess. But at any rate, not totally unusual. Glad you were up and glad you got to hear it. That's the best part of that story, I think. Support for KAXE comes from Itasca County Habitat for Humanity, presenting their annual fundraiser, Building for Tomorrow, on Tuesday, November 18th from 4:30 to 6:30. Full details are at itascahabitat.org. And support for KAXE comes from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8 p.m. More information is available at timberlakelodgehotel.com.
Let's take a look at the weather. It's going to be cloudy today. We have a chance of rain this afternoon. Highs in the low to mid 50s and southwest winds 5 to 15. Partly cloudy tonight with lows 29 to 34 degrees.
We receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com.
Coming up at 8:40, Mark Jacobs has produced another segment for us, Reducing Wildfire Risks for Landowners. We are meeting Gloria Erickson from Dovetail Partners. She's the Fire Adapted Communities Project Coordinator.
That should be an interesting program. I'm curious about that because a lot of us live in areas where we are susceptible to fire, and it's been dry, and it could be, you know, these could be valuable lessons that we could learn.
Coming up tonight, Cohasset Parks and Rec offers a full moon hike. You meet at the Clay Boswell Boat Landing at 7:30. Bring a headlamp and wear sturdy shoes.
Yeah, what a nice thing to do. I hope they get a nice clear sky. We receive support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 7 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and on Sunday from noon to 6. More information at klockowbrewing.com. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are moving into November. And I put together just a short list of things that that you can look forward to in November. One of those things on that list is the return of the pine and evening grosbeaks. And Scott Rolhagen, who lives up by Big Falls, said that 30 to 35 evening grosbeaks came in and cleared out his bird feeder over the weekend. So November brings grosbeaks, and hopefully this year there will be evening grosbeaks around. Used to be back in the 80s and early 90s, we had hundreds of them, and they stayed the entire winter, and they ate like pigs. And I guess I'm glad that they're not still here eating like pigs, because 40 pounds of sunflower seeds is almost $20 now. In those days, it was about $5. So you could kind of afford to feed them. Other things that are going to happen in November, we will have first single-digit temperatures. We may have, not every year, but we may have sub-zero temperatures in November. We will see the last flocks of crows as they either get ready to or begin to migrate. We will also see flocks of goldfinches. Some years they spend the winter. Other years they just flock up, come in, and disappear. We should have our last robin sightings, our last tamarack needles. You should be able to find and identify autumn willow this month. One of the things that always happens about this time of year when the leaves are finally down, you'll discover bird nests that are right there, right next to you, that you will realize that you have been walking past them all summer long and had no idea that they were there. So discover a bird's nest today and enjoy it, look at it, and marvel at its construction. Last black bears, cedar waxwings, and bohemian waxwings will come in. We'll see our last Canada geese, our last golden eyes, our last buffleheads, our last loons. We will have our last, we will have trumpeter or tundra swans flying through, and you may not see them, but you will definitely hear them. And the trumpeter swans will move south far enough to have open water. Red poles and pine siskins will show up. Ice will form and cover small lakes. The lake that I live on, Crooked Lake. Historically, the first ice is the 17th of November. Last dandelions, last northern harriers, first northern shrikes. First, as I mentioned, first northern shrikes. I wanted to just tell you a little bit about the northern shrike because it is an amazing bird. And it's an odd bird that shows up here in the Northland every winter. Not odd in the sense that it has extraordinary plumage or flies in an unusual fashion. Rather, it is a songbird that eats flesh. It actively hunts down, attacks, and kills mice, voles, insects, and even other songbirds. All other birds with such eating habits are relegated to the raptors group, not the northern shrike. It maintains membership with the passerines. Passerines are roughly defined as perching birds that possess vocal organs and are capable of songs. They also have a particular arrangement of toes, three forward and one backward, and muscles that tighten and secure the perch when they sleep. The shrike meets these requirements, but its habit of preying upon its fellow songbirds makes it a bit of a pariah within the order. The northern shrike is a robin-sized bird with ash-gray plumage on the body and black wings and tail. The tail has white feathers along the outer edges, and there is a white patch evident on the wings when the bird is in flight. The head is bisected by a black slash of feathers starting from the base of the beak. The beak is large and black and has a prominent hook at the tip. To the casual observer, it might be mistaken for a more commonly seen gray jay, but the presence of the black colors on the wing and tail should be definitive, for the gray jay only has black on its head. Our northern shrike has many other names across its range: butcher bird, winter butcher bird, northern butcher bird, nine killer, all stemming from its scientific name, Lanius excubitor. Lanius is for butcher and excubitor is for sentinel, a perfect description of the bird's habits. It often perches at the highest vantage point in the area, and when it has captured its prey, it will impale it upon a thorn or barb, sometimes hanging it from a crotch in a shrub, somewhat like the butcher who advertises his goods in his window. Speculation has it that the shrike hangs its meal because its feet lack the strength required to hold the victim while the bird tears away the flesh. Stories of eyewitnesses to shrike attacks reinforce this idea. Rather than strike with the feet as a hawk or owl might, the shrike uses its beak to subdue its adversaries. One such observation involves a field mouse dragged to the surface of the snow, then released so that the shrike might find a better purchase on it. The mouse immediately attacked and sprang at the shrike, driving it back several feet. The shrike was able to parry the attacks, using its beak to deflect the advances. Hoping it had gained enough space to beat a retreat, the mouse turned and ran. In two quick bounds, the shrike was on the mouse and, grabbing it by the neck, shook it vigorously from side to side, the way a dog might shake a rat. Pausing, the shrike bit the mouse along the neck and killed it. The hook at the end of the shrike's beak is designed to facilitate the clipping of the spine and works well for birds as well as mammals. One of the long-held beliefs about the shrikes is that they are indiscriminate killers, that they would kill more critters than they could possibly eat. In Africa, there are five members of the family known locally as fiscals from their rapacity, which no revenue officer could exceed. Israeli researchers discovered that males were more likely to hang meals and leave them as a display of their ability to be good providers. Female shrikes were more likely to mate with those males who had more bountiful larders. The same may be true of local shrikes. We don't see much of their courtship and nesting rituals in northern Minnesota because they occur on the nesting grounds, and those are farther north of us in Canada and Alaska. So that's just a little bit of information about the shrike, and it sort of gives you an idea about the bird. It should be showing up here sometime this month, and hopefully you'll be lucky enough to be there and report it to me when you do see it, because I would like to know. I used to see them all the time on the mail route, but now since I don't travel so much, unless one comes to my neighborhood, I'm not very likely to see it. This past week at my feeder, American tree sparrows showed up. Fox sparrows showed up. I still have a lot of juncos, red and white-breasted nuthatches, red-bellied woodpeckers. I had an immature red-bellied woodpecker, a male. You could see the red beginning right at the beak and starting to go back up its head. It had red on its neck, but the area between the base of the beak and the top of the head was still gray. I've seen downy and hairy and pileated woodpeckers. I had a female pileated woodpecker come to my feeder, and throughout the summer I've been watching them. They come regularly, but throughout the summer I would only see the male, and I suspected that he would take great quantities of suet and leave, and I suspected that he was probably going back and feeding his mate and feeding the young, but I don't know that for a fact. But this past week, the female showed up, and it was quite a nice sight. The trembling aspen cohort that is around the eagle's nest by my house has a different phenology than other aspens. And this past week, on Saturday, the last of the leaves came off. But prior to that, this past week, they were at their peak of color, which was much later than the other aspens. The other aspens around it are completely bare. Tamaracks have gone past their peak of color, unless you have some that are up on high ground. I have one high ground specimen that I keep track of every week, and it was probably at its peak of color on Sunday. It was just absolutely stunning in its yellowness, not the orange of the ones that are out in the swamps right now. The other thing that I want to mention this time of year is that you may have in your neighborhood, not because it's native, but because somebody has planted it, you may have a European larch or a Japanese larch, and both have a different phenology than tamaracks. There's a patch of European larch along the Harristown Road, south of Grand Rapids, sort of south of the airport, and they are absolutely at their peak of color right now. And over the years, there used to be a patch of tamaracks or European larch just north of Gunn Park. They cleared that area and cut all of those trees out of there. But as I ran my mail route, every year the tamaracks would go to this orange stage, and then there'd be these bright yellow tamaracks that were standing out just really ostentatiously. And they were not tamaracks, they were European larch. So if you have a bright yellow tamarack around your house right now, or if there's one in your neighborhood, chances are it's not a tamarack at all but one of its cousins, the European larch. I had a flock of goldfinches at my feeder this past week, came and hit the thistle feeder and ate a bunch of thistle seeds, but then moved on. Cottonwoods are probably approaching their peak of color right now, and the same is true of the weeping willows. The white popple and the Lombardy popple are both still with leaf, and so you may see some of those. Both of them are imports this time of year. It is the imported, those that are not native trees that are showing up. And to that end, it's a good time to go out and look for buckthorn because it should be covered in green leaves right now, which is unusual for plants this far north. I did see a large flock of snow buntings this past week. My neighbor Marvin had reported a single snow bunting along Blue Heron Drive, but this large flock was probably 50 birds, and they were hanging out along County Road 49 up north of Grand Rapids. So, few birds in the area, some new ones coming. Keep an eye out for the owls that will be coming down and the red poles and the pine siskins that hopefully will come. Evening grosbeaks, as Scott mentioned. Also pine grosbeaks. I haven't seen too many of those over the past few years. Perhaps this will be a year when they do show up. And finally, it's the first week that I haven't seen red meadowhawk dragonflies. Yesterday would have been a perfect day, and I went out and walked around a bit and did not scare up any. So that hard frost that came last week may have been the end of that group. So that's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, if you have comments, questions, or observations you want to share, please send them along. We'd love to hear from you.
Coming up, more student nature reports. We'll also have best wishes. And at about 8:10 this morning, we welcome in Tornado Bob for the big weather picture.
We receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com. We receive support from Edward Jones Financial Advisor Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Itasca Waters continues their free Practical Water Wisdom webinar series this Thursday, November 6th at noon. This month, the topic is how invasive freshwater snail species can disrupt ecosystems, with Sarah Kingsbury from Fisheries and Oceans Canada. Register at itascawaters.org.
Support for KEXE comes from Lady Sippers N.A. Bottle Shop, located in downtown Deer River, Itasca County's only N.A. bottle shop, offering ready-to-drink options and ingredients for craft cocktails, gifts, and more. Info available at ladysippers.com.
Weather around the region, cloudy skies, chance of rain this afternoon with highs in the low to mid 50s. Southwest winds 5 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows 29 to 34. Sunny for tomorrow, highs 44 to 50 across the region with breezy northwest winds up to 20 and overnight lows 22 to 28. Thursday, cloudy, highs 42 to 47 degrees.
We receive support from Lake Tax Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax, accounting, and payroll services for Minnesota businesses with locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City. More information at lakes.tax.
It's time for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Today is November 4th.
And we have no anniversaries today, although I'm sure somebody must have gotten married on the 4th of November. Why not? It's a perfectly wonderful day somewhere.
Might be election day.
Oh, that could be, you know, don't want to really.
You never know. Yeah. Not every year. We'll see.
Well, those of you lucky enough to be born today include Michael Hawkinson, who is 58. Michael lives in Independence, and it is his birthday today. And Miriam Tell, having a birthday today in Bemidji. Miriam, I hope your fingers are flexing and you're getting ready for some beautiful music on your birthday. Larry Johnson is having his 71st birthday today. Larry, I trust you brewed up something for a birthday celebration. I only wish I were there to share it with you. And Brian Whitmore is having a birthday today, and Brian is from Reamer. Happy birthday and anniversary to all of you. If it is your birthday or anniversary and you'd like to share it with us, text us at 218-326-1234.
I'm turning into someone that I've never known. Past is coming undone, but I like where I'm going. I know I'm changing, changing. Watch me go. When I look out my window, I see both the sun and rain.
Samantha Fish here on People Powered KAXE. Song there called I'm Done Running.
All right. Well, then it is time to tell you about Escape by the Lake on Paul Bunyan Drive in Bemidji. See if you can get out of that. Offering immersive themed experiences where teams work together to solve puzzles and find clues to escape within the hour. Learn more about the different themed rooms available at escapebythelake.com. And we receive support from Lake Country Power, a Touchstone Energy Cooperative serving more than 44,000 members of northern Minnesota. Lake Country Power, energy that powers our lives.
A couple curling clubs around our region are looking for new people. Curl Misabi and Eveleth has open houses each night. Right now through Thursday, November 6th, it's from 6 to 8 o'clock. Curling instruction equipment is provided. Bring clean athletic shoes, wear comfortable clothing, and a light jacket. And Itasca Curling Club in Grand Rapids has nightly Learn to Curl sessions. That is going on now through the 7th. Drop in from 6 to 7:30. Again, bring clean sneakers. Wear comfortable clothes.
Yeah, don't wear corduroy pants. And don't wear anything tight, like tight denim, because you're going to need to kind of stretch a little bit. Wear something a little bit like sweatpants, baggy, something stretchy.
What's wrong with corduroys?
Well, over the 50 years or so that I've been curling, every time I've worn corduroy pants, I have split them out.
Oh, okay.
They just rip along the whale.
Ah, all right.
Yeah, I've ripped out more than one pair of corduroy pants. You don't see corduroy anymore.
Not as much, no.
Oh, it was popular 50 years ago, I guess, and I found out why you don't wear it to curl. It just doesn't hold up in between the whales.
We are going to be bringing more student phonology reports, but we love hearing from you. Text us 218-326-1234. Maybe it's about corduroy. Maybe it's about the eradicating buckthorn, if you're spending all your time doing that.
Yeah,
Who knows what it might be.
Yeah, there's plenty of things that we'd like to hear about, so get in touch with us. We receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment, special orders available, and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Bemidji community members are holding a tailgate pantry Saturday, November 8th from 3 to 5 in the parking lot of the Paul Bunyan Mall near Hobby Lobby. Bring or take shelf-stable food or hygiene items.
We receive support from Beltrami Electric Cooperative, your Touchstone Energy Cooperative, providing energy to keep the lights on, coffee hot, and batteries charged. Connecting communities and powering life in northern Minnesota for more than 80 years. More at BeltramiElectric.com. It is time to continue with our student phonology reports. These come to us from schools across the state. They give us a chance to kind of see what's happening across the state. So all phonology is local, and what happens in your yard is certainly not likely happening in somebody's yard down in Little Falls, where Chad Caddett's class has this report. Funding for phenology talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, and our phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell.
This is Gavin
and Emmett reporting from Little Falls Middle School.
This is our phenology report for the week of November 2nd.
There have been multiple reports of swans in fields.
In the evenings, you can spot male wind and whooper moths on your window. The females are wingless and hoping the males will find them.
There have been numerous woodpecker sightings this week, with pileated downy and hairy visiting our feeders.
We had a report of a single monarch butterfly last week.
A classmate was able to find and photograph a red-bellied snake last weekend during our warmer weather.
We are still seeing humongous flocks of red-winged blackbirds in our area.
There was a young bald eagle and three crows feeding together on a roadkill deer carcass.
We had a trail cam image of a unicorn deer that was just holding one spike antler. We are guessing the other was damaged but still in velvet.
We did have another sighting of a black bear on the 28th.
On November 1st, we saw our first snow buttwings. There were three different flocks all spotted on the sides of roads.
Our tamaracks are all bright yellow right now and add a splash of color to our wet areas.
There was a sighting of a northern harrier as it hunted in an open field.
That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Thank you. That was a great report. Nice to hear from you guys, Gavin and Emmett. Boy, it's just amazing how attuned to nature those kids are. They've gotten a number of great reports there. Linden looper moths. they're like the last moths you're likely to see in the fall. And they're going to be out hanging around looking for those females. A single monarch butterfly. That would be, well, I think the 31st of October is the latest that I have a report for Monarchs. So last week would have been the 31st of October. So we'll make a note of that. Red-bellied snake out hanging around, and big flocks of red-winged blackbirds. The unicorn deer, spike, maybe, pardon me, maybe, as they said, it may have been damaged while it was still in velvet. A final sighting of a black bear on October 28th. That may or may not be the last one. Typically, there'll be a few discovered in October or November. And on November 1st, first snow buntings, tamaracks are bright yellow right now. They are, so that puts them about a week behind us or ahead of us, I guess, behind us maybe. Anyway, pardon me, they are just now getting to their peak of color down in the Little Falls area. And a northern harrier out doing some hunting. This is the month when I usually expect to see my last northern harriers, and they're no exception down there in the Little Falls area. They will have a couple more weeks of sightings that I will not get. Our next report comes from Justin Steffen's class at Linwood Elementary School, which is in Wyoming, Minnesota.
Greeting from the fourth grade phenology team in the Linwood School Forest. This is Colton,
Charlie,
and
Sophie
reporting on our observations from the week ending October 31st.
This week, we observed all the walnuts surrounding the walnut tree have disappeared. We wonder where they went.
We also observed both our silver maple and red maple have small little buds on them and are about 90% bare of leaves.
We also saw that our lilac is mostly berry except for a few flowers that bloom late in the fall. Why are there only a few flowers in the fall?
In the forest, we saw that our cottonwood is still holding on to some of its small waxy leaves, but they have changed to brown and yellow.
That is all from our Linwood School Forest. And remember,
there's no place like Linwood.
Thank you, kids. Colton, Charlie, and Sophie, great report. Lots of interesting things there. Walnuts surrounding their walnut tree, and they have a walnut tree right in their parking lot, which is way cool. The walnuts have disappeared. Well, there are probably squirrels in the area, and a walnut is a great source of energy for squirrels. There's a lot of oils in those nuts. They are packed with energy, and so pretty valuable. And if I were a squirrel and I came across a walnut, I would definitely haul it back to my little larder, my midden, and keep it safe so that I might enjoy it later on. Silver and red maples, 90% bare of leaves and covered in buds. And both the silver and red maples, and especially the ones that are like around here in my yard, the buds are red, round, and quite obvious. And those buds, they were formed this summer, and they are the flowers and the leaves for next year's crop. And they will hang on those trees until probably mid to late April, and then they'll begin to open, and we will see what the trees have been holding on to all summer. And their question about the lilacs, mostly bare except for a few flowers that bloomed late this fall. Lilacs typically don't bloom in the fall. Lilacs typically bloom mid-May. At least up here, probably down there early May. But there's a fungus that's been going around that affects the lilac bushes and kills off their leaves and leaves them bare. And the plants respond by trying to make sure that they can propagate for next year. And so they put out a few leaves and a few flowers. My lilacs put out a few leaves. No flowers this year, but I did have a number of reports of flowers in the area. So they're definitely struggling to make sure that they're going to succeed and be ready for next year. I wouldn't be too alarmed. Those flowers will not probably get pollinated and produce seeds, but the plant is covering its bets. Our final report this week comes from Cassie Korsendorfer's class at Rockford Middle School.
Hello, this is Jay,
Oliver,
Owen,
Ariel, and Crosby.
We are reporting on the week of Friday, October 24th through Tuesday, October 28th for Ms. Korsendorfer's sixth grade class at Rockford Middle School.
We have had highs of 60s and lows of 30 with good amount of sunlight and precipitation.
On Friday, October 24th, we had our first hard frost at 29 degrees Fahrenheit.
The plants and grass were covered with frost and reminded us of winter and Jack Frost.
Some of the lilac plants have bloomed again and survived the low temperatures.
There have been lots of sightings of coyotes in neighborhoods. They are coming out of their dens because they are claiming territories.
Shout out to John Latimer for coming out to Rockford to take a walk in the forest and teach us about phenology.
We learned that dogwood leaves can tear and still stay together.
That is all for our October Phenology Report. See you next time.
Bye!
Thank you, Jay, Oliver, Owen, Mario, Crosby. Great report. Nice to visit with you guys. Good to see your forest. It was a really interesting visit. And we, among the things that we did find were lots of dogwoods. And I showed them how the leaves in the dogwood can be torn and then how they hold together and how that's a good way to determine whether or not the shrub in your yard is dogwood. We also looked at aspens, and we noted that the limbs on the aspens are the same color as the trunk, which helps you to differentiate them through the winter when you have birches, which are also white trunked, but the birch limbs are dark. They're brown, black, red, deep red. It was a really nice visit. Thank you, Cassie, and thank you to the students who were very attentive. We did a whole morning's worth of walking up there and just had the nicest time. They have a wonderful forest there, and I commend Cassie and her group for the work that they're doing and for sending us their great reports. Thank you very much. That is it for our student reports this week. As always, if you have things that you'd like to share with us, a report of something happening in your neighborhood, we would love to hear from you. Please take the time to send us a text this morning or just send it along as an email. We'll be happy to get it. Support comes from the Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience, located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65. Find more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters, your source for great music weekdays from 9 to 11. You can also hear it at 10 p.m. to midnight. Today, our host is Malachi Coons, and he's going to be talking with Brainerd folk musician Kelly Smith. She's joined the program to talk about the upcoming Grassroots Concert Series in Nisswa. Smith is the new artistic director for the series, which began back in 1988. And then tomorrow, Wednesday, a live session, an interview with Americana band Megan and the Birdwatcher, who recently released their second album, Americana Dream. Thursday, we get Spin That Ish, favorite music from the month of October from the KEXE music team.
Spin That Dish?
Ish.
Ish. Spin That Ish.
Yeah.
All right. I'll have to tune in and find out what that is.
Yeah. We've got a brand new podcast, the Season Watch Pod, and it is a podcast for the curious. It is filled with the delights of nature. New podcast debut on Thursdays, and you get to hear John Latimer. You hear some student reports. Last week, we got to hear Andy Try talking about bears.
Yes.
With us.
Yeah, that was great. And some really good information about chipmunks.
Yeah.
Some things that I did not know. One startling fact is that in a year like this, when we have a massed crop of acorns, chipmunks can gather all of the food requirements that they need for the entire winter in a couple of days. It just floored me. I thought, my God, they spend the whole summer storing away hundreds of sunflower seeds. And if they could go out to my red oak and gather enough energy to keep them through the winter in 2 days, why do they bother? If I were a chipmunk, I'd get me a lawn chair and just sit out and kind of enjoy the sun and think, okay, no problem. Come October, I'll just go out and grab some acorns and disappear. But that's not the nature of the chipmunk. He's going to make sure he's got plenty of food stored up. I wonder if that... Yeah, I thought about that after I read that. I thought about that for the longest time. Like, what do they do? I mean, seriously, my dog killed a chipmunk one day, and its cheeks were stuffed with sunflower seeds. So I thought, well, how many can they hold? And I dug them out of the cheek pouches.
Oh, my God.
Which, by the way, the cheek pouches in a chipmunk run.